I'm going to start by saying it is a true joy to be here with you this morning. Not only do I get to be here with all of you at Reeb, but I got to create this service with Karen, which I must admit was pretty much the highlight of my week. So thank you for giving me the opportunity of being here with you. Earlier this year, on the very same weekend, my oldest, Sam, turned 10, and for the first time in his life, flew a plane. Now, before you begin to question my parenting or maybe my good judgment or lack thereof, let me tell you it was a flight simulator at the Experimental Aviation Association in Oshkosh. It was part of a Cub Scout overnight, and although there was little to no sleeping involved in this sleepover, there was much wonder and awe and amazement to be found. The kids learned how to imagine and build paper airplanes that were then put through tests of speed, distance, accuracy, endurance. They needed to create an aircraft from very fancy supplies: paper, plastic straws, rubber bands, 1 foot of toilet paper, 10 inches of masking tape, and a garbage bag. An aircraft that would help their extranaut land safely from a drop off of a 30-foot balcony. And oh yes, in reality, the astronaut was an egg. They also learned about the history of aviation and the inventions and the ingenuity, the experiments that worked and moved aviation forward, and the ones which were not as successful. And they asked questions, they wondered, they experienced the magical moment when your world turns upside down for a minute or two. At one point, I was standing a bit away from the group, and I noticed the faces of the kids and some of the adults as our guide led us through the history of aviation. They were learning about something we could all experience by a simple trip over to the Dane County Airport, and as long as we could afford the ticket and had the proper identification, we could step on a plane and fly to any destination we choose. We could sleep through the flight. We could look out the window at the landscape below. We could consider it another normal, everyday, ordinary part of our modern existence. Humans can now fly. We do it every day. And we grumble about the lines, about the luggage restrictions and the fees, the tired and cranky staff, the lack of snacks on the flight. My personal grumble there. But in that moment in Oshkosh, I was able to shift my perspective and see the ability to fly through the eyes of the children who were learning what it took, the time, the creativity, the energy, the lives, all that it took to get humans into the air. And I now think of it as humans can fly. It's amazing. Astonishing, really, that shift in perspective, many times through a child's eyes, can move us out of common experience and into a sense of precious wonder.
And Kelly, since you said that out loud, I also have to say that working with you was the highlight of my week.
You just got to say that now.
I just got to say it. So I am amazed by flying from a whole different perspective. I think about lift. Lift is that thing that happens to an object that's just the right shape, like a bird or a plane, when it goes fast enough. It's a force that directly opposes weight, right? Lift. That's generated, I read, by a solid object as it moves through a fluid, which can be liquid or gas. Lift happens, according to the NASA website, when the fluid is turned aside by the solid object, moving through it. This is physics, right? There's physics here. There's physics everywhere, right? And I'm an ecologist, not a physicist. But from what I understand, the law says that for every action, there must be an equal and opposite reaction. So when an airplane, and most especially its wings, move through the fluid of our atmosphere and pushes the air beneath it down, the air pushes back up, and the plane is lifted. The faster the plane goes, the more air it pushes out of the way, and the more lift it gets. Amazing. All of the things around that are amazing. First of all, that it happens in the first place. Things can fly because they push the air around them out of the way. Second, that we can watch that happen and emulate it, as Kelly talked about a little bit. The Wright brothers and all these others before them and after them, they used trial and error after watching all these birds doing it, right? Trying to copy that process. There are 31 people listed on a Wikipedia site on aviation pioneers as having tried to fly before the Wright brothers, all the way back to the 8th century BCE. So learning to make it so humans can fly, was a progression based on our powers of observation and mimicry and deduction. We humans and the possibilities that we hold are amazing. Third, that we can go beyond simple emulation and actually learn about these principles that make flight possible. Sir Isaac Newton, who stated that third law of motion that we're talking about, learned that movement is a result of the force that objects exert on each other when they interact. This was a progression as well. My understanding is that he started with an idea expressed by the Greek philosopher Aristotle that objects could only move if there was a force of some kind inside them, making them move. And he eventually developed the idea that the force must be responsible for any changes in how things move, like in acceleration or speeding something up. And then through experimentation and observation, all these things that we humans do so naturally, figured out that the total momentum had to be constant. Therefore, every force had to involve the interaction between two objects. Pretty cool. For me, having even this very basic and probably not quite right understanding of how flight works only increases my amazement at it. Knowing that flight, that all movement is relational, that movement cannot be generated by a single object by itself, is evidence of that which is greater than each of the parts in our universe. And knowing that we humans are capable of figuring out how things work is awesome in a whole different way. I'm an ecologist. So when I look at a tree, I see not only intrinsic beauty, I see a system of chemical and physiological interactions, both within the tree and between it and me. I understand the system of photosynthesis, for example, that happens within the structures inside the cells and the leaves, how a tree makes food for itself in the presence of sunlight. The fact that a tree can make its own food is pretty amazing in and of itself. And then having some understandings of that process opens me up to see it in an even more amazing way. And even better. Even better that the tree uses carbon monoxide and water in the presence of light to make oxygen and carbohydrates. It uses the carbohydrates, that's its food, and it releases the oxygen, and so I become part of the process because as I breathe, I need the oxygen that tree releases, and I release the carbon dioxide that the tree needs. We are part of the system, able to see it for what it is at the same time. As the cosmologist Carl Sagan put it, we are star stuff. We are a way for the cosmos to know itself.
love that Sagan quote, and it reminds me of Sam, my little flight attendant, is in a class at First Unitarian called Exploring Our Origins. It's all about evolution and how we came to be. And 2 weeks ago, he walked up to me after class and he said, "Hello, woman, who is nothing but dust." And of course, my very formerly Catholic mind went to, "Woman, you are dust, to dust you shall return," right? That was the first place I went. And I looked at him and I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Mom," and his eyes were huge, "we're made up of stardust. Did you have any idea?" And I just loved that my mind went to dust you shall return. And he was having this moment of amazement of the fact that we are actually made up of stars. And I love what Karen said. All movement is relational. All life is relational. How wonderful is that? It's been said that wonder is the thing that pulls us out of ourselves, out of our daily concerns, out of our worries and our fears. And whether it's the fact that humans can fly or the wonders of lift, awe, whatever it is that brings you awe, that is what pulls us together, makes us feel more connected to those around us, makes us feel connected to the stars, and motivates us to act for the greater good. Amazement sets itself over and again against the backdrop of daily life, against all those things that become routine and familiar, predictable, and it helps fill us up, it renews us, and gives us the ability to start again. Wonder speaks to our hunger to be moved, to be engaged and impassioned with the world, to find and re-find pleasure, fascination, astonishment with both the extraordinary and the commonplace. This hunger is our deep desire to feel alive, to feel connected, to feel a piece of that system, the web, a piece of something larger than ourselves. In our age of incivility, aggression, downright meanness at times, wonder can be the piece that helps us manage the disturbing negative realities of life and puts them into a perspective that allows us to balance, allows us to remember the love, the creativity, the resilience, the courage. Paul Piff, who is a psychology professor at UC Irvine, has studied wonder and awe, and he says that there are pretty common experiences that evoke these senses. An awe-inspiring thing, he wrote, can be literally large or just conceptually large. But in either case, your current understanding or frame of reference can't accommodate it. He pointed out funny videos of babies riding through tunnels for the very first time, how it gets really, really dark all of a sudden, and then it gets really, really bright again. And he said, if you look at their expressions, it's confusion, it's surprise. They're trying to make sense of how does this work? I went in one side, I came out another. No surprise, he said, that we equate wonder with childhood, when everything is fresh and exciting and new. Now, while there's general agreement that awe can be a powerful force in our lives, there's this growing suspicion that we as a culture are generally awe-deprived. We've got less time on our hands and fewer windows into wonder, right? There's decreased funding for the arts. There's increased urbanization. There's less time in nature reflecting on the connection with the trees. There's more and more hours working, and there's less time to take in the sunshine. So if you combine all of this with this pervasive cynicism that we seem to have working with us, you've taken away our ability to feel wonder. So when our days are filled with errands and things to do, we rush through them and we miss those moments of engagement, concern, astonishment. And it doesn't only have consequences for us, but consequences for our larger world. Rabbi Arthur Waskow, who's the director of the Shalom Center, wrote that he believes this lack of wonder is what is leading to our current ecological crisis. When we are children, we marvel at the world. Everything is new and fresh. Everything is a miracle. But as we grow up, we see these things that first made us wonder over and over again. We ask for the names of things. We learn to identify them. We give them a place in the world. We learn how the process works. We manipulate and we control reality, and our growing sense of ego allows us to hold our own in a fearful world. But all of it comes at a price. For in the process, we learn how to distance ourselves from this natural world that we are a part of. We come to mistakenly believe that life is, for the most part, pretty ordinary. We've got these moments where we marvel at a sunrise or the power of a thunderstorm or the fact that, woman, you are nothing but dust. But for the most, we focus on the things that need to be done, and those moments of wonder fade into the background. We think of the natural world as something that's there to be used for our benefit. And wonder and awe become rare visitors to our days. And this is the fearful danger to humanity. Without wonder, we have no reverence, and we become unconscious, using the world as we see fit. What seems to be the prevailing notion now is the belief that the world is here to suit my needs and my needs alone. Driven by our fears and our cravings, we drown out wonder, we lose our mindfulness, and we can forget why we are here.
Don't leave us there.
Nope. Now you gotta bring it home. No. I gave her the hard job.
No pressure. No pressure. When we lose a sense of awe, a sense of miraculous ordinary, we forget why we are here. And when we remember a sense of awe, a sense of miraculous ordinary, we can remember why we are here. How do we do that remembering? I would love to be able to tell you that all we have to do is decide to take the time and the space, and we will find awe in our lives. And sometimes that is true, and we can do that. And sometimes, often, it takes more work than that. And neither Kelly nor I have the answers on what that work might look like for each of us. We have some general guidelines, perhaps, like slowing down enough to notice the amazing things all around us. Somebody in this congregation, I don't know if they do it daily, but they post pictures. And good mornings, and this is the day we're here for. And so I think maybe they have that practice. Or going out into nature, or being present with what's going on inside of us when we sing, or believing in something we can't see, all of the credentialing bodies I have seen and all of the mentors I have worked with in my journey have advised me to create and deepen my spiritual practices. And it is now, in a time where awe seems far from me, that I fall to those practices of walking in the sunshine, of holding a down dog longer than I ever thought I could, of singing in the shower, of walking my child to school, of folding warm laundry, doing them intentionally, doing them with thought and feeling. Those are some of the places I find my way back. And so I'm going to invite you, not with a microphone like I had thought, because it's 10 to 11, but I'm going to invite you to share what brings awe into your life in a way that one of us sitting among us sometimes does. For the next week, I want you to try a practice. I'm going to encourage you to try a practice of taking that cell phone out of your back pocket and flipping it to camera and taking a picture of something that brings you a daily inspiration, an everyday miracle. As you move about your days carrying that phone in your pocket or your bag, and you're struck by something, remember to pull it out and take a picture. And then send me those pictures. Text them to me, email them to me. In 2 weeks, we will see them all here on our wall. So we're sharing with each other, not just remembering to find the awe, but sharing with each other the places that we find it in the hopes that we can help each other remember. I'd like to close with a poem written by the Reverend Barbara Peskin, who was a retired UU minister. High above you the sun shines, and beyond its glory, the stars of night hide in the daytime sky. Below your feet, worms out of their bodies remake the soil. And at the center, the earth still simmers with its first fire. Somewhere between the starts and the earth's core, we live and weep and ask and laugh and answer. How can we not be amazed? May it be so, and may we be so.